Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. This week, I am joined by my friends, the Blur Girl, Karim Horn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski, and for this special 150th episode.
Is it really?
Oh, my God.
We are centennial.
We are 150.
This means I've done 50, because I came on 100.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
It time.
I'm 50.
You're trying to get us stay alive in these streets. Don't tell people your age.
Oh, please. I'm a Time Lord. I'm actually 72. Nobody would know.
Oh, all right. I can't do that anymore. But we're joined by Valerie Complex. Hey, Valerie.
What's up? How you doing, everybody? I'm here for the 50th birthday of the Blur Girl.
That's right.
I'm excited to be at this party.
Who knew? Who knew? We all looking probably a little different than we did a year and a half ago. I had a full head of hair a year and a half ago. This is true. And it is like rapidly dissipating.
I was 28 a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we were all doing a little better. Exactly 1 or 2 years ago, we were all probably okay, and now
so much has changed.
What could it be? What a mystery!
There's a very profound Shins lyric that I always call on, which is "The years have seemed short, but the days were long."
Yeah,
and there you go.
Sure. Be kind. Rewind.
That's going to be the subtitle of the show.
Yep. Yeah. Grand opening, grand closing.
That's right. Anyway,
very exciting that we've reached 150. Adam and I have been together since the beginning
of time.
It feels that way sometimes.
You two make a lovely couple.
Since the first atoms split.
There you go.
They split into an atom. Yeah.
That's good because your name's Adam.
I wasn't even making that joke. They're spelled differently. I don't know if you guys know that.
I didn't. Thank you for explaining it to me.
Sure.
You should come up with a term for when a man explains something to other people.
That's called Tuesday.
It's called...
Oh, wow.
It's called male's position.
Whoa.
I just made that up.
I feel like this is like Annihilation fan fiction. Like Adam splitting and all that.
That's right.
Anyway, Adam is very good at pretending that he likes me now. It took 150 episodes, but like... you were a good actor before, but now you're one of the greatest actors of all time now.
Yeah, it's one of the great underappreciated acting performances.
It's true. I appreciate it.
Will I ever win an Oscar, a Tony,
Give
or an Emmy?
Give him his Emmy.
I know.
That's right. Yeah, what's the podcast equivalent?
I don't know what the heck they're called.
That sounds terrible.
It's awful.
Anyway, some stuff happened this week. A movie dropped. It's called Halloween. Apparently, if you look up Halloween, there's Halloween and Halloween parentheses. Old.
Really?
That's messed up. That's
so the original is now called Halloween parentheses old?
Yeah, that's what it says on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. I was
old
like,
or 40.
Yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, Halloween 40.
So now since this podcast is 50, we're now going to be Who Won the Week parentheses old.
Yes, exactly.
That sounds good. That sounds right.
Change your Twitter handle. Blurred Girl. Parentheses 50.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Accurate. So anyway, we'll talk about that. Daredevil got season 3. That's out now. And then... Iron Fist got canceled. Chuck Wendig also got canceled.
Wow.
It's been quite a week.
Life comes quickly.
But then this comic called Shuri dropped. It's based on a character that maybe a couple people have heard of. I suppose a couple people like her. She's all right. But before we do all the big newsy stuff, we do a thing at the top of the program, doing it for 150 episodes, where we talk about what we're personally sort of geeking out about, what we're into that week. Adam, I've never really gotten a feel for whether or not we should keep doing it. 150 episodes in, should we still do it?
I would like to do it 150 more times.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when we get to
check in, because I may feel differently next
week. I will. I absolutely will.
But as of right now, I'm feeling it.
That just means we're going to get to episode 300.
I think I will be dead before we arrive at episode 300. I don't know
and
if I can.
We'll be recording on stone tablets in the post-apocalyptic hellscape.
Oh man,
yeah,
that sounds amazing.
Great.
I've never thought that I could record on stone before. But,
yeah. Or we'll use like mockingbirds, birds that can imitate human speech, not mockingbirds,
the
but
mockingjays,
exactly.
Yeah, they will spread.
We'll be like, fly, my pretties, and they'll spread our podcast
maybe
far and wide
in your favor.
To the various pockets of civilization that have survived.
That sounds terrible. Only there'll only be five listeners, and they'll all give one star.
No, you ever seen Terminator Salvation?
Wait, it'll be
like an hour.
Did you really bring up Terminator Salvation
today?
I did
because he has John Connor has like a podcast that people tune in and listen to. You know, if you're a part of the resistance, then you are.
Actually, I forgot about this because
I remember about scripted podcast.
Like, legitimately, the only thing I remember about Terminator Salvation is that Terminator has a heart.
I did.
Yeah.
And that was enough for me. I was like, that's enough. He doesn't like, they're like, did you get it? He has a heart. And I was like, okay.
And then the other Terminator had the Neuve.
That's it.
The Neuve.
Yeah. If only the other people involved had brains.
Hey!
Yikes. Anyway, man, now that we've gone negative, let's go positive. Adam, what's winning your week? What's going on with you?
I don't usually plug my own work. But I'm great.
Oh yeah, it's usually my beat.
No,
yeah.
This week I got the chance to interview Michael Douglas.
Wow.
In person. For
Where was that? Where was the set?
Marvel's office, right around the corner from here. Actually, it's so funny, man. They bring you into this conference room and it's got all these like giant, incredibly detailed statues of their characters. I'm like, feel free to take some pictures. He's like, okay, they know they're playing with house money there. So anyway, I got to interview him for the home video release of Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I did get the chance to rewatch as well as I was preparing for the interview, and I really enjoy that film a lot. I mean, it's not perfect; it's a little shaggy, but Hannah John Kamen is saddled with one of the all-time clunky exposition speeches of all time, but. Other than that, it's a really fun movie, and I could watch Luis tell the story of everything that happened in Ant-Man and Marvel Universe up to that point over and over again. But then interviewing Michael Douglas was really cool. I mean, I don't get, I've been doing this a long, long, long time.
Oh my God.
I've been in digital media for 150 years.
He fell asleep in between two of those longs.
Literally, my career in digital media is old enough to drink. So I've interviewed, a lot of people.
Let it date?
Yeah, no. Absolutely. My career in digital media is a strong, independent woman, and I don't need no man.
Wow.
Yeah. So. That was another Brooklyn Nine-Nine quote, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was
such a huge Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
So anyway.
Here.
I can't even do the voice.
Like I said, I don't particularly get starstruck, and I wasn't here, but it was just really, this guy is like a legend. Like, he's been around for 50 years, and you know, people were asking me how to go, and I thought it went really well. The guy's a professional. He knows how to do an interview. He was charming. He asked me where I was from. He said I should play the young Hank Pym, which I thought was kind of cool.
Wow.
I was like, okay, Kevin Feige. I know he's got cameras all throughout the Marvel complex, I'm sure. Like,
I can see it. I can
everybody.
See it, though. I can see it. Yeah.
Oh, nice. I'll take that. See? There you go.
Yeah.
This is happening now.
The non-wife beating version. That's very important.
Yes, exactly. I actually didn't ask about that. I was going to ask if they ever considered like calling back to that at any point, but I didn't get to it in my interview, unfortunately. But
I think that's probably okay.
But no, it was a really great interview, and it's just like, it's cool because at least outwardly, again, I know he's on the clock when he's doing interviews and stuff, but he seems really psyched to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and to be he was never like, oh, and I had to deal with this whole green screen effects thing. Like, he was really into it. And I asked about, him being an older actor who's been around prior to this era, and now we have this de-aging thing and Peter Cushing being resurrected, posthumously. In for long shots in Rogue One
and how
he feels about that, and he was psyched. He was like, yeah, it's exciting about what they can do, and he said I should go back and reboot all my films and I'll play myself, so it was just a really fun interview with a guy who had a lot of interesting things to say. So look for that. That'll be coming, I don't know when yet exactly, but it'll be on our YouTube channel, on social channels, and probably in various other places that Sci-Fi Wire distributes. So that was my thing for the week.
Is it me, or these days, does he look just like his dad?
Oh, yeah.
Like, every picture I see Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
It's like, random trivia, my cousin is his electrician. Like, he has a house in Bermuda.
Is his what?
Is his electrician.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Like, he has a house in Bermuda, and remember him and Captain Zeta had, like, moved there for a while?
Yeah.
And he's got family there. Actually, technically, he occasionally calls himself Bermudian because his grandparents born and raised there. But, so, yeah, it was very weird. I was visiting, and my friend, yeah, I gotta go over the Douglases again. I'm like, Michael Douglas? Oh, yeah. It's just like, okay.
There you go.
But that's really cool.
Yeah. That was really cool.
That was my thing.
Good job.
Thanks.
Well interviewed. Proud of
you. I hope so. Hopefully the end result
will... We're just happy that you're happy.
Actually, and then the video comes out, and I'm just like, dang, Michael Douglas, what do you like to do?
You'll be fine.
Yeah. I believe that is not what happened.
No.
I think, haven't we? I mean, like, I would say from when we started doing the live stage stuff to now, haven't we all probably gotten better at interviewing at
this point? My God, here's hoping. Otherwise, it's been
Okay, this is for both of you. Danny, you did an amazing job in your Doctor Who interview. Stop saying you didn't. Adam, I'm sure you did an amazing job on your Michael Douglas Ant-Man and the Wasp interview.
Thanks, Karima.
I wasn't there for either, but I'm sure you did really
I feel like
well.
I can do anything now, you guys. This is great. My self-esteem just
But that's what we're here for.
It's great. It's great. What's winning your week, Mom?
Oh, God. That was good.
More Ovaltine, please.
I'm so proud of you, too. Mine is actually not comic-related. It is science related. I'm geeking out because Godzilla is now a constellation. Well, unofficially. Basically, NASA, if any of you science geeks out there, you know that NASA has this Fermi gamma ray telescope. Now, as the Hulk has taught us, gamma rays exist on a different light frequency than what's visible to the naked eye. So don't worry, our regular constellations haven't gone anywhere. The original 88 that you can see with your regular like reflector telescope. But basically, I think it was part science, part marketing for this new telescope. But NASA basically announced this week that they found 21 new gamma ray constellations with this. And they showed their inner geek, basically. They named one the TARDIS. Another one is a Hulk. There's a Starship Enterprise. There's Godzilla. There's a bunch of other characters in there, too. And actually, very proud of them. You know how sometimes when you see the constellations and you go, that doesn't look like a bear. Why is that a bear? But they actually found constellations to like look like a lot of these things. So good old Gojira has his own constellation. And it's actually fascinating. And I also find it interesting how NASA, this is one thing that is kind of geeky that I do. Sometimes I watch the NASA feed, which is just like on in the background sometimes when I'm working in my house because I'm a geek. But it's fascinating sometimes watching that feed as well as hearing like a lot of the cool stuff that they're finding. So I'm geeking out over stars in the sky because Godzilla and TARDIS.
If I win this giant Powerball lottery, my mission in life will be to launch a number of artificial satellites that will form a Godzilla-shaped constellation. That will be my Mecha Godzilla constellation.
There you go.
That will then fight the Godzilla constellation.
They will fight the Gamma one. Yes, because you
hashtag
have
goals.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that astronomy and pop culture they have this strange relationship these days because recently, about 1 or 2 years ago, two different partnering galaxies were named Tetsuo and Akira.
Yes.
And I thought that was really, really interesting. And there's
a testament to how many geeks are actually working for NASA.
Right. Because there's like a whole program in Japan, and the acronym for it is MANGA.
Manga. Oh, it's actually manga.
Yeah. And
that's
I was
awesome.
Like, wow.
And for those of you listening who don't know, manga is the Japanese form of comics.
And so this partnership or this marriage that's happening, I think is really cool. You look up in the sky and you're like, oh, that's Godzilla. You're like, oh, that's Freddy Krueger. That's cool. Look at that. Like, I think that's really cool. So totally understand why you're geeking out about
it. Oh, yeah. No. And I also think for kids, like on the educational level, mm-hmm. it's also getting kids interested in astronomy again because it's a very, even though there are digital telescopes, it's a very analog thing to like get up and at night and look through a telescope at the sky when most kids are looking at, you know, now I really sound like a mom. These kids, all they want to do is look at their phones. They're never looking up. They don't know what's going on. So yeah, I am just geeking out about all this because this is my childhood right here.
Let me tell you something. Godzilla's from Earth. So if they wanted to put somebody up in space, it should have been King Ghidorah. So these kids aren't learning anything.
Or Mothra.
Well, yeah. No, Mothra's from Earth
also
too.
From Earth. Yeah.
Mothra's Terran.
What about Gamera?
King Ghidorah, that's a good question.
I believe Gamera is from space.
Maybe, but you know, King Ghidorah is the one. If you're going to do
that's true, though.
Do it right.
That takes a lot of stars, though. Yeah, heads.
Make it work.
Also,
you know what I mean? Tim Gunn could do it.
I only found five names, and they found 21. So maybe there's a Ghidorah up there, and I just don't have the name.
Oh, okay. I hope so. That's important. That's very important to me. All right. Cool. Good geek. You did it, Valerie.
I'm geeking out over horror. I'm a big horror fan. One of the first films I remember watching was a horror movie at 5 years old. Loved it, fell in love with it.
What was the movie?
Night of the Demons.
Oh!
Yeah. Why in the world were you watching Night of the Demons at five?
Where were your parents? My dad was right there. He was just like, you're going to get exposed to it eventually. Might as well just start early. And I was watching and I was like, this is kind of cool.
Kids love being scared.
It's true, yeah. My dad was the same way. He was like, here's some crack. And I was like,
No!
Because kids don't realize that real bad things can actually happen yet.
That's true.
Yeah, so, anyway.
You don't realize that things can actually blow your head off.
Right. And but what I actually did last night on Twitter was something that I really geeked out about. I put out a call for folks to give their two sentence horror stories.
Oh, right. I saw that.
And, you know, I was like, women and people of color apply within especially. And there were some really great responses. And I was really impressed with some of the stories that people put out, just two sentences. They're like, this is easy because I don't have to commit to writing a full story. I'm like, y'all are lazy. But but it was really, you know, cool to see people come out and to see so many horror fans, you know, be interested in just creating a two sentence thing. And
can you send that list to Blum?
Whoa, that's going to happen. We'll probably talk about that.
I already tagged them in it. So I'm like two steps ahead of the game. I was like, hey, we got the juice. You should check this out.
And you know what? In Blum's defense, I did see parts of that article that where he was misquoted. Mm-hmm. They did really go for the zing with the title, but it was he should never have framed the question as,
right,
or the statement as, I can't find any women who direct horror. He should have led with, I've asked all of these women and they've turned me down. Mm-hmm. He should have started with that. Then the question is, why did they turn you down?
Right.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on there with like, they use pre-written scripts.
Yes.
Blum does.
Mm.
Because it's cheaper to use a script that's already done. So I think that was the case with several of them anyway, that they mentioned that he went to them with these scripts and they were like, no, I want to write my own thing.
And
that's not what Blumhouse does.
They didn't shine a light on that. It was more of the, and I am not sitting here defending somebody saying something stupid, but I did think like, okay, that was a little bit clickbaity because he has actually talked to
Blumhouse is like they look for directors to produce. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the reason,
script's already done.
Yeah, so the reason they made the kind of money they did was like their first huge, huge success was Paranormal Activity, which has no script. Like that was script three in 93. You know what I mean? Like that was a thing that script three in 93.
It was not 93.
I know, but like
your joke is pointless.
Here's the thing. When I was in New Jersey and a child, we used to say...
You were not a child in 93.
Florio free in 93. I was 13. I couldn't vote yet, so technically a child. But so whenever I... Anyway, the point is... Y'all really decided to challenge me this morning.
Yes.
Okay.
But kudos for you to getting back on track.
Yeah. I don't mean like... Yeah, they made all their money like to really get themselves going off a thing that cost... almost nothing.
$0.
Because, like, they had two people that really, like, hadn't done a lot of acting before. There's really not a script. It's just, like...
It's really not a gaffer.
Like, there's, like, literally, like, one of the actors is the person with the camera, like, walking around with it and whatnot, you know, put on a tripod. And it's, like... Yeah, and that movie made, like, crazy money. Like, that was the thing that, like... Like, what Blair Witch did as a one-off, for the most part, pretending those are the Blair Witch movies did not happen. Paranormal Activity turned into a franchise. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, like Blumhouse wouldn't have happened without that. So I think that's a big part of why they operate the way they do.
Yeah, yeah. And this, and taking the optioning a script repeatedly, you know, when dates change and stuff like that, they save all that money and save all the money on rewrites because the scripts are done before they find people.
I guess
it was still a stupid comment though.
Yeah. That's like being like, you know what? Why don't y'all go to A24? Like,
right.
That's don't do that. That like, you should maybe like just like have like a little, I don't know, just have like another little subset of Blumhouse that spends money.
Are you geeking out about anything at all?
Me,
Danny? Yeah.
I saw a trailer for a Blumhouse movie that I really liked.
Which trailer?
It's the sequel to Happy Death Day. It was at the front of Halloween last
night. They already have a trailer for a sequel to that.
That movie is coming out in February.
Didn't it just come out last year or something?
Yes.
The first one?
Are you
ready? So the thing is, the trailer
Wait, why
is
are we getting a
the
new
trailer's
Happy
not
Death
even
Day?
Online. It's not even online yet. They debuted the trailer at Halloween. They haven't put it it's not on YouTube as of the last time I checked. Maybe it'll go up sometime today. It is called Happy Death Day to You,
number two,
and the letter U. And basically the trailer is just like, she thought she got out of it. She like is carried on with her life for a while, and then something happens and she wakes up all the way back at the beginning, all the way back at the start. But now the thing is not just after her. It's trying to kill like everybody. So she's got to get all these people in the college on board, and it's like, literally, there's a moment in this trailer where, like, A, there's, like, 20 people with a baby mask, and then also, there's, like, a giant Hadron Collider-looking thing. Like, they're going to do, like, some time travel, like, Circa the Cube or something. Like, it is so completely outlandish and ridiculous that I'm, like, I'm
You're
about
on board.
It. I'm on board with it. Like, I think it's going to be funny. Like, I think it's going to be really, like,
comical. Well,
because
it was a sleeper hit of last year. Nobody, people slept on it, and when we saw it, we were like, whoa, this is, like... This is fun. It was sort of refreshing last year, because last year was kind of heavy. So.
Yeah, and at long last, a character named Tree.
Tree.
That's her name. That's the character's name. Her name is Tree. So
is she very tall?
No, that's just her name. But yeah, I just
she have a sister named too.
I hope so. Wow. Anyway, the fact is, wow. Because you know what it is, my brain skipped over it. And then eventually the rest kind of
came back.
It caught up. That was like acid reflux. It was not good. It was a bad joke. Please leave that to me. If it's going to be a bad joke, please leave it to me.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, no, it looks really good. I had no idea. Apparently, like a couple weeks ago, they mentioned that it was going to be happening and that it was probably going to come out in February. But like, I missed that. Missed that bulletin because I work a lot. Doing a lot of things in my life, so that one kind of went past me, and so I was like, literally, it was me, my wife, and my friend Ken, and we were just sitting, and it came up, and we were like, "What? No,
February is an odd month, though, to release that."
This is what
Super
I will say
odd.
About this: there are no weird months anymore. Like, Glass is coming out in January. So, like, and Black Panther came out in February, so that was fine, you know? I mean, like, I guess I can't really make a comparison, but, like, also they were going to put out, remember that time they were going to put out that X-Men movie in February?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like,
we now have two
Happy Death Day movies before either Phoenix or New
Mutants. Well, let's be fair, though. The amount of effects and post-production work that goes into a Happy Death Day movie is obviously quite limited.
It's closer to Blumhouse.
Once again, I'm just pointing out.
There's a Hadron Collider or something going on in there. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that should be like the next friend. They should just keep making those movies. Honestly, they can make those movies forever. And I'll tell you the reason why I know that they probably will is the dude that they brought on to direct and co-write this one is the guy that did all of the Paranormal Activity sequels.
Well,
that is true. The guy that did 2 through 4 or 5, it's the same dude.
Well, the next obvious one is Happy Death Day 3D.
Oh, they better.
I mean,
they better. And it better be where you got to bring the old, you know what I mean?
Red like,
I
don't want blue.
With like, the red and blue,
none of this modern, active, none of that. I just need the blue and the, anyway.
It'll be a double feature with Freddy's Dead 3D. Remember when that was 3D?
Of course.
Final Nightmare.
Yeah. Of course. Because that had,
but it
like,
was not actually
the Power Glove was in that one.
Yeah. Like, so
was Roseanne, though. So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
So we don't talk about that anymore.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Anyway. Wow. We sure talked about this trailer. Anyway, that's the end of that segment. We did it. Boy.
For the last time.
For the last time, but not really.
Probably. Or not.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm just going to shut this side of the table out.
Oh.
Y'all are done. You can comment if you want, but it's going to come from a place of ignorance.
We're just going to be on our phones.
So this is true. Karima and Adam are scaredy cats.
I don't think Adam is a scaredy cat.
Oh, I'm very much a scaredy cat.
Oh, really?
See? Yes.
Y'all are too scared to watch horror movies.
Well, no, the funny thing is, I did tell you earlier in the week, if you really wanted me to see it, I would listen to it. I would listen. I would go to the theater and just listen to the movie because there's no way I could watch it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, was not even willing to do that.
Wow. Anyway, Valerie and I are professionals. So Valerie saw Halloween, the new one, at TIFF.
Yeah,
and I saw it last night. What did you think of it?
I thought it was goofy as hell.
Really?
But I liked it.
Wow.
I actually loved it.
Stop everything. I loved it too, but I didn't walk out being like, wow, goofy. Not you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like, oh, yuck. That's not where, you know,
no,
what I'm
not,
saying? Like, that's
well,
not where
I
my
say
brain
goofy,
went.
I don't mean like Goof Troop or anything. I mean like,
oh, well, then I'm out.
Just some...
Wow,
just,
I'm amused that you went to Goof Troop, though.
Yeah, I just mean, like, certain things were just like, oh, come on, man, like, really? And certain deaths were like, I don't know, just, you know, I think I view horror differently than a lot of people, and some things were just like, you know, slasher, to me, tends to be a little on the goofy side, and I just loved it because I thought it was refreshing because horror is always so serious now. And it's like horror is tackling these social issues, which is great because it's another avenue for horror. But it was a great return to the slasher stuff to see, you know, people being stabbed and people running through the streets and boys trying to cop feels, and you know, just it was like a return to like '80s,
a return to innocence.
It was like a return to like '80s slasher stuff.
But like, you know what? I mean, I guess that's true. But it has like one thing that's kind of social. It's in there.
It does. It's in there.
It's in there. So like, all right, just to like give the setup for the movie without like spoiling the whole ass thing. There is podcasters that go to talk to Michael, and they also want to talk to Laurie Strode because it's been, you know, whatever, 40 years, and like they've got, you know, like a criminology podcast. They're doing Serial or whatever, 20 versions of those there is about this thing that happened, and stuff goes awry, but. Pretty early on, like, they want to go talk to Laurie Strode, and they're like, you know, we're really trying to understand Michael Myers. We're trying to figure out why he would do these things. Like, where is he coming from? And she's like, oh, poor Michael. Everybody's got to figure him out.
Right.
But I'm a basket case.
Right.
And nobody cares about my situation.
Right.
Like, because, like, you know, a minor spoiler, like, things have not gone well for Laurie Strode.
Right.
She is not over it, and everyone is like,
get over it.
You need to get over it. And she's like,
well, I almost died, so I'm not going to get over that.
Yeah.
So there's some, you know, they play with the elements of like what it's like to have PTSD and be a long sufferer, and being a woman and what that looks like. Because let's think about it. If Laurie Strode was like Larry Strode, then he'd be like this gruffy, like, war-torn hero that's like, you know, but now it's a woman, it's Laurie, and she looks crazy, you know, her hair is all over the place. They made her seem like, you know, one of those old witches who hides in the house and never comes out or whatever, and it's understandable because, you know, what happened to her in the first movie was super duper ultra rough. So I don't know, you're right, there's, you know, there's that element there, but I felt like it was subtle. And that is the part of the film that I thought was well done, because they didn't have to hammer you over the head with that. It was like, you see.
Yeah.
You know.
She mentions it once. The rest of it is just in the portrayal.
Right.
And there's one, they do bring it back in a way, although it's more related to, let's say, a societal tendency for people to try to relate with the murderer,
right,
because he's a man,
right,
and then also sort of betrays, like, why is it that other men are so quick to excuse and to try to relate with a person like Michael Myers?
Right.
That's interesting.
I think that's interesting. A lot of people want to try to rationalize his causes and why did he do it and where does it come from. And, you know, it says a lot about, like, you know, sort of perpetrator and victim sort of relations where people don't believe you, people don't listen to you, nobody's trying to hear you, even though the whole time she was right. And people are trying to rationalize, like, oh, well, why did he do it? Oh, it's just something that boys do. Like, no, boys don't go around, like, killing people. Like, that's not, you know, I mean, like, let me take that back. Children don't go around killing people necessarily in that way.
It's pretty uncommon.
Yes.
Not a typical thing.
Not a typical thing.
No.
But people want to know. They want to rationalize it. And I think part of that comes from the level of comfort that people want when they come in contact with or, you know, try to understand killers. I have no idea why people want to do that. I guess it's just something that exists.
Well, they've erased the continuity, Valerie, so now it can't be like, can't be because, like, he's secretly Jamie Lee's brother. It can't be because of, like, a cult around him. It can't be because it can't be because it's a Rob Zombie movie and so therefore he's like he's poor white people, and as we all know, when white people are very poor, murder is the first thing that happens.
Exactly. For lay people like myself, you're referring to all the other Halloween movies that have come out?
Yeah, because they've
been erased from canon. Basically,
it's all, everything except for the first one.
No, because I do not watch this movie.
Yeah. The they've been erased.
Okay, so it's just the very first one?
Yeah, so like
and this one.
Yep. So basically, like, what it was before was you'd have, like, the first two were always around, and then you'd have, like, three is kind of its own separate thing that has nothing to do with Michael Myers, but then, like, four, five, and six, I think, or whatever it is, like, they're all part of one continuity. Then they went back and then said, okay, never mind all that stuff. Just go back to the first two again. And then they did Halloween H2O and Resurrection, and that was the first time they ever brought Jamie Lee Curtis back. And then they were like, nah, never mind that. We're going to reboot the whole thing. Then they did two movies with Rob Zombie.
Right.
Where Michael Myers is a child and talks. What? That's rule one. The man don't talk.
That's the thing. That's his thing. That's his brand.
That's his brand.
Not talking.
Yeah.
So he's off-brand because he's a child and he speaks.
Michael Myers had a Twitter feed, it would just be empty, blank posts.
Or it would just be like ellipses.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Thousands and thousands of ellipses.
Or maybe just images. Like, he wouldn't write anything, he would just put pictures of, like, dead puppies or something?
Actually, it would be shapes.
Wow. Good job.
See, so you have seen horror.
I have. I did not enjoy it.
So, yeah. This is a thing you avoid at all costs. But, yeah.
So, I'm feeling like maybe this was
Adam and I are going to go back to watching The Great Bake Off right now.
No, it's very good. Maybe this, you know, this thing was good for it. I just don't know how they're going to continue, if they plan to. Is there a plan to continue? Because the way it ended was like, what?
I definitely think that they will. And here's my justification for that. It's probably going to make $70 million this weekend, which, if it wasn't for Venom, that would be the highest grossing October movie of all time. Mm. Like, Venom had to come and change the game.
Right.
But you know what that says to me? They got to, you know how, like, they did Freddy versus Jason?
Mm-hmm.
You got to do
Venom versus Michael?
Yeah, why not?
What?
Yeah, why don't you do that? Why would they not make that? I mean, like, that's just leaving
that
money on the table,
like,
if you don't make it.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
No, it's the best idea
Venom
I ever had.
Versus, then we got to do Michael versus Predator.
Does Venom talk all the time?
Freddy versus Predator.
Has that happened already? I feel like that's happened already.
It should. Freddy versus Predator, that's amazing.
Can we have, like,
what do Predators even dream about? We don't know.
Can we have, like, a Justice Infinity League of, like, horror people who, like, stop the symbiote?
Well, they do this stuff, like, they'll bring all the actors in, but very rarely do they all play the characters. So, like, in Wishmaster, for example, Freddy Krueger's in it, But you know, he ain't playing Freddy Krueger. It's just a dude.
Well, then it's not Freddy Krueger. It's Robert Englund.
I know, but you understand what I'm saying.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah, like and then Kane Hodder is in it, but he's not playing Jason. And
or like anytime you see Tony Todd show up,
and Tony
like,
Todd, and this is what I'm saying
like,
to you.
Wait, no.
And Tony Todd was in the movie.
Yeah, he was.
And this is the most. This is why Wishmaster is like one of the most whack movies I've ever seen in my whole life. I'm supposed to believe this like evil genie is going to beat Jason, Freddy, the Candyman? I don't believe you. I fundamentally
like all of them.
Do not accept that, like, there's just no way that this dude is going to come in and beat Tony Todd on Tony Todd's worst day. You are not beating Tony Todd. Like, just look at that man. The man is undefeatable to me.
Yeah, it's because I don't know if you've ever met Tony Todd, but he's like 6'5".
He's enormous.
Like
it's like meeting Kevin Greaver.
It is.
It's like, oh, wow. For those of you who don't know who that is, he
wrote the Underworld.
He wrote Underworld, and he was also the lead Lycan,
yeah.
And in real life, his face does not open like that in real life, but he's really like that big.
Yeah, and you're
but you
like,
know, I mean, if it did, I don't think he'd be showing it to you, but like, you know, that's a special occasions kind of thing. But yeah, I kind of. What do you think about you like the deaths because they were kind of off the wall?
They were, you know, in typical Mike Myers fashion. I was like, you know, they didn't really add anything. Like, they kept it really basic and really original, which I really enjoyed. They didn't include, like, you know, final destination type deaths where fans are spinning off the walls and slicing it.
You're talking about my favorite franchise right now.
I dig Final Destination, but you know, the it's another goofy franchise in my opinion.
That's right.
You know, but
I feel like Captain America. I know that reference.
Yeah.
I watched that movie. Actually, I watched all of them
really
because somebody convinced me that they were not horror movies.
They're not scary.
And they're not. Actually, it's more thriller.
They're thriller.
They're
yeah.
sort of jump scare kind yeah. of things. And then the thing that you jump at is not what kills them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, so, yeah, I, so,
yeah.
Hey.
My wife's got a lot of jokes about that. She's always like, the Rube Goldberg machine of death.
Yeah.
And also, like, there's always, like, the air's always blowing, and she's like, death is a gusty bastard.
Yeah.
Like,
that's true.
Or death's like farting up a storm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The wind
that's
is always
you know.
Blowing.
You're like, what's that? Oh.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's death.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. But what I really also thought was interesting is that Michael has sort of a moral code. I don't know if it's a moral code or maybe it's, I don't know what it is, but
there's
like,
one code. There's like one thing he doesn't do.
And
a thing.
What do you think it is?
See, now I don't want to, I guess it doesn't. Okay. So these are like minor spoilers if you don't want to know anything. He doesn't kill a baby. That's like the one thing that doesn't happen, but he does, more spoilers, kill a child. So that's not much of a moral compass.
So his moral compass expands for what, like 3 years?
It was probably like 10, 11,
12,
maybe
12.
12, 12.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so he doesn't kill babies. But something I also figured out was like he thrives on fear, you know, which is something that wasn't explicitly, I didn't get in the first film, but in this one they made it like clear. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. He thrives on fear, so that's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
But I always found his lore kind of interesting because it's a human guy that just walks around and suddenly, like, you've run like a mile and all
but
of a sudden
he's still
there.
Like he is still that's the thing, they definitely don't take that away, that he's unkillable,
right?
Like, it is really like the man, like, you can hit him with a truck and he'll do that thing where like he's laying down for a second and all of a sudden he just like bolt right up.
Right.
Like, that's him. Like, it's very hard to get rid of him. All right, listen, I think we're going to talk about, if you didn't see it, just skip ahead like 5 minutes. But, like, there's some relevant, some important things that happened. Was there anything that you did not see coming? Was there some stuff that you were like, what?
I didn't see the child thing. I was like, what? I was, like, totally shocked by that. I didn't see, there was the kid that was in the house.
The second kid.
Yeah.
The kid was being babysat.
Yeah, he was like...
He was like the best character in the whole movie.
I did not see that coming at all, because that's not, you know, that wasn't something that...
Yeah, they don't usually give the kids like a lot of...
A depth or, you know, there was a lot of color, you know, because, you know, the first couple of movies are very dark and bleak and very serious. This one was...
It's got some, it's a little bit of both.
Some moments of levity that I didn't expect.
Were you surprised? This is all right. I will say the thing that I was surprised about, and you tell me if you were also surprised. So there is a character in the movie. Obviously, Dr. Loomis is dead because the actor is dead. So they brought in a new guy, and he seems very Loomis-like. But then it turns out that he's on Michael's side.
I saw that coming. I don't really? Know why.
Wow, that really surprised me.
When he did what he did, I was like, oh, okay, I saw that coming. I don't know. It was something, he seemed too invested and interested in saving.
But that's what I was talking about. Like, he's the one where it's like, that's where they lay it on thick.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, do you get it that like this old white man is like, really wants to excuse this other man's very bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Because he also wants to be a murderer.
Right.
Like, he wants to be Michael Myers, and he wants to get away with it. Like, mm-hmm. if he can excuse Michael Myers' behavior, then he could excuse it in himself.
Right.
So, like, that's, like, it's a little thick, but, like, it's one moment of the movie.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why. Just, like, I wasn't surprised by that, but I was.
I guess it's 2018, so it's just, like, it just seems like a thing that would happen.
Judy, what's her name, her full name?
Judy Greer, I think.
Yeah. Her character surprised me as well, especially at the end with her, because she plays these. You know,
She plays Laurie Strode's daughter.
Right, and she plays very motherly characters, and I've always liked her acting. I always thought she had a really cool voice or whatever, but I didn't expect that level of badassness from her.
Yeah,
and
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, she looks great. She just went right back into the role like she never, like there was no 30, 40 year break. She just went right back in.
There was no weird transition, like how.
It did not know.
It was amazing.
It was so seamless, and she just fit right back in. And Jamie Lee Curtis is very talented, always has been. She's still got the juice, she got the sauce, right? And she's ready and prepared, and I was excited. I was rooting for her the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I know what it's like to, you know, go through something, go through trauma and not be believed. So I was able to relate to her character very much. And I had a lot of empathy for the character. So, yeah.
I think that if the Star Wars universe is really, like, hard up for a new matriarch, they should bring Jamie Lee Curtis in, to be real.
True.
They should do that. Like, if they're really, like... Like, you can't replace Carrie Fisher, but like, if you're like, man, we really need somebody that's gonna like step in and have that flavor, like,
yeah,
that's a similar type of human being, too. Just period. Like, if you've ever met Jamie Lee Curtis, you've ever seen her do interviews, she's a very similar type of person, like, does not care if you're gonna be like uncomfortable about what she's gonna say, she's just gonna speak her truth, and that's how it is. Like, and she's funny, too. She's really smart.
We're putting it into the ether. Jamie Lee Curtis, Star Wars.
Should be in Star Wars. They should put her in Star Wars.
What would you think of that, Adam, if Jamie Lee Curtis was in Star Wars?
Great.
Yeah, there you go.
Any ideas from any
Like,
canon?
I'm not saying, like recast Leia. I'm just saying put her in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
no, anyway. I want something new.
Yeah, don't recast Leia.
Don't do that.
That's what I'm saying. Don't resurrect the character from canon. Just give her something new.
There's a...
Like Holdo. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Do something like that. But, well, what did you think was the best part of the movie? I had a moment where I was like,
I have a couple of favorite scenes, but the scene where he's just going around town just murking people. I was like,
this is why we can't watch these movies.
Yeah. Like, he does murder a lot of people.
Like getting murked.
Get someone with a hammer. Get someone with a knife.
I was just like, wow, is it going to stop? Because like every scene was like, what? It's happening.
No, he murders a lot more people in this movie than because he only kills five people in the original, but he kills a lot more than that.
Like he pretty much the whole half, like he kills like a good 10% of this town.
Yeah, like, he's just on it.
Wow,
he just keeps going.
So wait, so she warns everybody with a die anyway?
Yeah, people don't listen to that.
People don't
watch horror movies because that's every movie.
No, but that's why I don't watch horror movies. Yeah. It's like she told you,
like she's like
everybody was warned.
They
in
see
the
her
beginning.
Like a screaming harpy.
You know, the beach has to stay open for the holiday weekend.
There you go.
We've had this trope forever.
The house tells you, get out. And no, we're going to stay. We're going to just, hey, let's hang some bath towels. That's why I don't watch horror movies.
That's it. Yeah, that was the thing. Like my wife came out the movie and she was like, it's October. You telling me in 2018 people still got like their drawers out on the line? You know what I mean? Like, is that still going on?
Like
Haddonfield is the land that's time for. That's like Brigadoon. Like,
right,
what's going
on? You still live.
You break into. There we go. The musical.
Yes. Yeah.
There you
like
go.
You still leaving your doors open? Like, I know your town is like 500 people, but
this right here is why I can't watch horror movies, because I'm sitting in there like,
no,
your
it's
doors
because
open,
they,
the children
pipe
are walking out.
That gas in that makes everybody make questionable decisions. We've all seen Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, that's true.
Basic stuff.
Right.
But I will say, so like in the original Halloween, the end of it is like Jamie Lee Curtis beats Michael Myers. He goes out the window, and like she is like out of breath, trying to keep it together. She sees his body out there. You kind of turn away. You look back. Body's gone. And that's how the movie ends. Now, in the remake, it's Laurie Strode goes out the window. And then like Michael Myers also has been like roughed up real bad by her at this point. And so like you see her body out there. He turns away. He looks back. She's gone. And then the rest of that movie... Now she's the predator.
Right.
She's the one, like, she's like done being the victim. Now she's going to make, like, now he's the victim. And, like, that whole rest of that movie, like, he is the one that's, like, looking around for her, scared.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was,
like, the ending. That house scene was my favorite because it was like, it went from being like slasher to like thriller cat and mouse.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just done so seamlessly and so well that I really just enjoy it. And they have like a, you know, it's weird, you know, when the villain and the hero have like this mutual respect for one another. Like
sure.
He wants to savor the kill. And
yeah,
like,
yeah. It's like Batman and the
her,
Joker, you know.
Right. Taunt her and she, you know, she just wants to get it over with. But, you know, they
oh,
have.
Oh, wait, what's up? Now I know. Never mind the Star Wars thing that I said. Jamie Lee Curtis for Batman.
For Batman?
For Batman.
She should play Batman, Joker, Poison Ivy, or Catwoman.
She'd have to be like Dark Knight Returns Batman.
Yeah.
Though.
So? Sounds good.
No, I'm saying that's fine.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. Like, better her than Ben Affleck. Sorry, Ben. Sorry about it.
Ooh, that was low.
Well.
Funny, though.
Yeah, that was just funny, but low. and I think that, I don't know, I'm just looking forward to more. I really hope that Jamie Lee Curtis and the same folks sign on to do more of these.
They sure did not show a body. So,
no, they didn't.
Like,
you didn't even, like, you just saw.
I was like, there's no way.
No.
Michael Myers is not dead.
I was like, there's some hole in the wall somewhere
yeah,
where
he got
crawled
out.
He got out.
You know? I mean, it was pretty, like, also, somebody, like, so the end, I mean, like, if you really chose to listen to this part of the podcast without seeing the movie, like, you hear in the end. So, like, Laurie Strode's got a whole house that, like,
it's like Home Alone for like
horror movies.
Yeah.
But it's like said, I mean, like she's like, you know, like her daughter is always like, you've made like a little prison for yourself, like a cage. And it's at the end that Judy Greer realizes like that's not what happened. Like what she made was a trap. Mm-hmm. So the trap is like she was going to like get Michael into the basement that's down there as like a panic room kind of thing, lock him up in there, and then like the whole house is going to burn down. Mm-hmm. And when I came out the movie, my wife was like, that seems like a bad idea to me. Like, that seems like she would probably also die. And I was like, see, you thought her plan was to live.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that, not for 1 minute.
Neither did I.
No, I didn't even get that from the trailer.
Like
she was like, this is ending. I don't care how it ends. I got that from the trailer.
Yeah, I don't care how it ends. Like, if we get stuck in this together, you and I will burn together.
Right. She was in the trailer.
I assume that's what she thought was going
to
happen.
If I have to, like, take a grenade for both of us, I'm doing it.
I'm doing it. Like, it was like the self, like, she was willing to self-sacrifice. And, like, her thing was not to live. Her thing was just to finish.
Well, was it all, did it also seem like because she was so tormented by everything that happened?
Oh, yeah, she's definitely tormented. Like, there's like a whole scene where, like, She's not supposed to go to this dinner.
Yeah.
But like her granddaughter really wants her to
go to
the dinner.
Like she has a nervous breakdown in public.
And she just like, that's it. Like she goes out to try to talk about it. And like, yeah, she just like starts like crying, like just straight up crying at the restaurant.
So overall, do you guys think this was a good remake, reboot?
Continuation.
Sequel.
Yeah, yeah, or whatever.
Continuation
or
whatever.
Yeah, like new sequel.
I really dug it. Like I'm going to go see it again. Like, okay. It was, I saw it for free at TIFF, but it's worth.
It's my favorite Halloween movie that I've seen since the original, honestly. I don't think there's any other ones that I would even put close.
Season of the Witch or GTFO.
Wow, for real? You're going
to
bring out
I'm going to bat for that one.
Three. That, that's super upbeat film.
H2O was pretty cool. Like when Busta Rhymes gave him a roundhouse kick, I was like,
that's wait a minute. Wait.
Put your legs with my head in the seat. Yeah, I was like,
that's
but
Resurrection,
Busta did not protect his neck.
Was that Resurrection?
That's Resurrection.
I'm so confused. No, H2O was with...
H2O is LL. LL Cool J is in H2O.
Oh, with Michelle Williams. That's right. That's H2O. Oh.
Yeah. Resurrection is not a good movie, but it is pretty wild.
They get,
it's a journey. That's true.
See, this is why they erased the continuity, because I can't tell them apart. Yeah. I don't know which one. Like, what? Oh, man. I surely thought that was H2O. Are you sure?
Positive. Okay. Busta Rhymes is in Resurrection.
And that's the one about the reality show, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. God.
On My Life. That's the one.
Then what the heck was H2O about?
H2O is the one where, like, she's like a mistress at the school, and, like, Michael gets out, and he's, like, comes to the school, and, like, she's got, like, a kid there, and, like, all the kids are at the school. Like, LL Cool J is the security guard.
I have to watch that one again. I don't even remember that.
Yeah, I like that one. Resurrection is fun to watch. I would not call it a good movie. I mean, Busta Rhymes is in it, so like that alone is worth the price of admission.
Season of the Witch is the one with the young girl who's possessed.
That's the one with the masks.
No,
it's the one that has nothing to do with Michael Myers.
It has nothing to do with Michael Myers at all. Silver Shamrock, the masks, the pumpkin masks that they wear, and then it eats their faces.
That's
the best one.
Bugs and everybody loves that upbeat one where it's like, I just want to turn them kids into bugs.
Yep.
Wow.
Upbeat movie.
I'm like the guy who murders 50 people with a knife. That's totally upbeat.
Yeah,
you're right. I'm sorry. My bad.
But that's Lori's story. Lori's the champion. Her and her daughter and her granddaughter. And by the way, my wife caught this and it was really smart. She was like, it's like Red Riding Hood. Because like the granddaughter like literally goes over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house, and specifically refers to Laurie Strode as not grandma, not Graham, not whatever, but grandmother always. And I was like, that's weird. And then, Raven was like, oh, that's because it's over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. And I was like, that's pretty slick.
I think that's a really astute observation. I didn't catch that before. I think I'm going to be looking for that when I see it again. I'm going to be like,
yeah, she's smart. This is facts. Everybody, if there's one thing that anyone should ever take away from this podcast, it's that all of my best observations come, I just steal them. I steal them from my wife. She is really smart.
I'm going to be looking out for that. Tell her thank you.
Yeah, if she didn't have better things to do, I would peace out and have her host the podcast.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's that. Now everybody can come back in, because we're going to talk about Daredevil and what limited capacity we've had time to see it. And I honestly, so like, yeah, Daredevil season 3, it's out. Like, this is the first thing I thought when I was watching it, was like, I appreciate that they're doing these character studies. I know that the Marvel Netflix series a lot of time want to be like capital A art. They want it to like the direction they want it to be very artful. The fight sequences, they're like, we want this to be like something that is like really beautiful, better than anything else you're going to see anyplace else. But like, who has got the time?
I so disagree with you.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I have the time.
Oh, okay. I have no time for this.
Oh my God. I actually breathed a sigh of relief when I got through the first episode of this
okay,
show.
Okay, good. Because I was really wondering whether you'd like it or not.
I disagree with you. I think this is the only Marvel Netflix show that really aspires to that capital A art thing.
I thought they really were, maybe they really wanted to with Jessica Jones. They really thought they were saying something with that second season.
No, that's true.
They definitely said something, just not what they thought they were saying, you know.
No, this one achieved
it. But this one is like, it's I think it's just because it's the most noirish of them all. And film noir is not an action genre, you know. It's not there was action in it, but it wasn't about the gunfights. It was about the characters and the atmosphere. And man, I'm 3 episodes in to this season, so obviously I still have a long way to go. But I am so glad they're letting it breathe, and I like the character stuff spending time with Foggy's family. Like,
yeah.
I was there for that. And that's, you know, I think that we've all been conditioned with these shows now on Netflix and wherever else. We have to blitz through it as fast as we possibly can. Because that's, you gotta binge it, you gotta binge through, blah, blah. And I am so here for just taking my time with this show and spending time with these characters. And there are moments of action that punctuate things in the first three episodes, but it's, I'm psyched that it's the direction they chose.
I think I'm right down the middle. I think that, first of all, that Daredevil is like Iron Man to the MCU in that it was the first one. So they kind of let them do whatever they want in the first one. And some of those iconic moments, those really good fight scenes, those, that old boy hallway scene and everything. I think all of that and the pacing of the first season. The only thing that I do not agree with from the very first season is the killing of Ben. Can't stand Karen. I'm further along than you guys are. Karen completely infuriates me this season, but it has nothing to do with the delivery. Mm-hmm. It's just how they wrote her. But I do think that this does have a pacing where 13 episodes don't bother me as much as they do with the some of the other Netflix Netflix shows. I think the first season of Jessica Jones was very artistic, did have the same pacing as Daredevil. Reminded me of that. Nope, did not do it in season two. But I think the other thing that Jessica Jones did season two, which was a mistake of Luke Cage season one, was having too many baddies and too many things to look at. Mm-hmm. This we don't. I really like, seeing Foggy's family. I also really like how they're introducing Bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very logical, not logical, but it's like, it's kind of scary because it's believable how he is turning into, or he might already be, really. We're not sure. I'm four in and I'm not quite sure. But the fourth episode really gives you a character study on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it is almost, to me, it is almost like he has an advanced, he has dealt with PTSD for so long that the way he's functioning is almost like somebody with a high-functioning alcoholic. He's like a high-functioning person with PTSD. Like, because he's been in the military so long, he knows how to, he thinks he knows what to do to handle all his triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really fascinating. And they take almost an entire, I feel like episode, maybe two episodes to do it because I'm halfway through five. So it's, I like it. I think, again, Karen does some stupid things and it aggravates me because she's sort of playing the dumb female character in this and I can't stand it. One, because Ben was better. And then two, because I feel like Ben's character would have gone across multiple shows. But this is really, I agree with you, Adam, that this is sitting down and pacing yourself through this one. I am not going to binge this one. I'm going to probably do one or two episodes at a time. Like I did, I'd seen one a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So this morning I'd seen one and two a couple weeks ago. I watched three and four this morning and part of five, like on the train, because Netflix can download.
Yeah. The first episode, like I really agree with what you said about film noir. And I think people miss that because it's they're caught up in him being a superhero, whatever, that they miss that there are story elements there, where it's a comic, but it's like a whole nother genre. It's not like action or whatever. And I think they're really taking, there's a bit of levity here where the first season was in your face. And then the second one was like, what the hell? And so
that is how I felt as well.
Yeah. So I think that they've taken a step back and said, okay, let's repurpose this and let's try to do something different. I have not been a fan of the Marvel shows thus far. Unfortunately, I wasn't as hooked to Luke Cage as others were, and I was afraid to express it because I didn't want to get dragged. Also, you know, same thing with Jessica Jones. I did not like season one. I did not like season two. I do not like the show. So I don't think I'll be watching season three. But I think, like you mentioned before, Daredevil's the first one. So I think that they're just more willing to play around with it. And I think Daredevil has more staying power. I think as time goes on, we're going to see them drop. And Daredevil is probably going to be the last one standing, as we'll get into the next topic. But, you know.
But these are all related. Like, here's what I would say. Like, that's like Iron Fist season two, a lot better than season one. And you know one of the things I liked about it? Only 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm saying to you. I'm not saying, like, don't bring your capital A art. I'm not saying, like, I don't want that. What I'm saying to you is, like, I don't need 13 episodes. You, honestly, I believe they can do most of these series in 9 to 10 episodes.
Sure.
And the reason that I think that is, and I was thinking about this just this morning, was look at the trajectory of Doctor Who. Doctor Who used to do 20-plus episodes in the 60s, 70s, 80s, a season, half-hour episodes, whatever. And, like, especially, like, John Pertwee era, like, you know what they did with that time? Oh, no, Companion got caught. Doctor rescued her. Now the Doctor got caught. Companion, now they both caught. You know what I mean? Like, just, it's a lot of...
The TARDIS is coming together.
Yeah, like, they spend a lot of time, like, just wasting time. And then, like, you get 13 episodes that are, like, 42 minutes and, like... They would still have throwaway episodes, but like it was a little tighter. It made a little more sense. And now, but now, like honestly, like they only got 10 episodes to work with, and in my mindset is good. Like you're gonna have to work within that constraint. The episodes again are like kind of like 50 minutes long, but there's only 10 of them. So like to me, I think for a lot of shows to only have that, and a lot of British shows operate this way, where it is like 8 to 10 episodes. You know what I mean? Like.
Unless you're Sherlock and it's
yeah.
four.
But like, you know what I mean? Like, to be honest with you, I think that in a lot of ways and for a lot of type of shows, I think that that is a benefit. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't like 13 episodes we've seen over and over again with the Marvel Netflix model is too many episodes.
I just think I wouldn't say that necessarily. I think it just depends on the story that you have to tell. I mean, and honestly, it's hard too to say because right now I'm 3 episodes into the show. If you'd asked me 3 episodes into season 1 of Luke Cage if I liked the show, I'd have been like, hell yeah, I love this show. This is great. And then the back half of the season kind of lost me.
Yeah.
So because they had this narrative that then took a total left turn and gave you something completely different.
Too many baddies.
And I think the same thing happened with Daredevil season 2. You know, the first half of the season was the Punisher and then the ninjas came in. So...
And then there was Elektra who...
Yeah. So... this is kind of a wait and see type of situation. It's hard for me to say right now, sitting here, whether this season having this many episodes is a good or bad thing. I hope. I mean, to me, the relationship and the dynamic between Wilson Fisk and Matt Murdock and all of that is so compelling. I'd like to believe that there's enough there that they could sustain narrative momentum, especially bringing in the Bullseye aspect and everything for 13 episodes. I hope that that's the case. I don't know yet, not having watched everything. So. Who knows? Like, by episode 8, we could be in an entirely different story because they've wrapped up the Wilson Fisk thing, and then I'll be like, why the hell did that happen, and where are we now? But from at the beginning, anyway, I just, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio...
He's consistently good!
He's such a presence, you know? Even, there's a shot in episode 3, he's under arrest, or house arrest, and there's a shot of him from behind, and he's just sitting, watching, or looking at a white wall, and he's... It's so intimidating, and then the camera pans around him, and he's got this pained look of anguish on his face that completely changes the tenor of the scene as soon as you get in view of his face. And it's just such a powerful performance. And we, like, again, I'm early enough on that I'm sure I'm not even getting everything that's going on with the Kingpin in this season, because obviously we've seen more stuff in the trailer.
But that is a callback to season 1, though.
Yes.
And his development, the which I think stuff. Is, yeah. Which is
so,
amazing.
So it's just... Having him back as a main player and, you know, it's funny because in minor spoiler in episode 3, this starts this dynamic of, you know, there being a ghost's Kingpin that talks to Matt Murdock and lays the guilt on him. It's like the manifestation of his guilt. And when that first happened, I was like, oh, that's kind of whack, you know, but then once he started talking and it developed what that little mechanism was going to be. Worked for me really, really well. So that's I'm hopeful
but
at
I
least where
think,
I am that this is going to sustain.
I also only think that Vincent D'Onofrio could pull that off because of his gravitas.
Yeah.
Like Danny Rand could never have pulled that off,
right?
But like,
wow.
But that he has. But it was we were actually before the podcast talking a little bit about Shakespeare, and it was a very Shakespearean
yes.
moment talking yeah. to the ghost of enemy future, I guess.
And it's just also, man, especially after watching Iron Fist season 2, the action scenes that we've seen so far and the fights that we've seen so far are such a huge relief to me.
Oh, yeah. This fight team is ridiculous.
Yeah. And especially because, you know, again, I love Mike Coulter, and I think Luke Cage is a great character, but there's so little drama in these fights. And they cop to it. Where the guys are like, he's like, really? And the guys say, yeah, we have to tell him that we tried. You know, and then it's just him beating up 50 guys.
Because he just flicks somebody in the head and they pass out. Yeah.
And you know, the Iron Fist fights could theoretically have been that, but the team, I don't know whether it was the fight team or Danny Rand, you know, what's his name?
Finn Jones.
Yes, thank you. Or whoever.
It's okay. I forget it. I forget it often.
It's Finn Jones.
Or just the martial arts fights, you have to, it takes a certain level of something to pull it off in a way that looks more than people doing fancy moves for the sake of doing fancy moves.
And cuts, you know, from the camera every time you make a punch, there's a cut and like to make it, which is make your head spin.
But the Daredevil folks, first of all, you've got a guy who sure has some ability, but is still very human. And then just, it's very visceral, the way they're shot. It's as someone who geeks out over fight choreography and stunt stuff, like it's really, it was just, it was such a breath of relief and seeing that.
I also think that supporting actors, because sometimes the supporting actors they bring in are kind of, nah, but I think they're all like really strong. Joanne Whalley is Sister Maggie. I'm like, this is one tough nun.
Yeah, she's good.
She's not here for any of his nonsense. We've met Bullseye, but Wilson Bethel, he's not just really good because he's got perfect aim, but his character development as an actor, I'm enjoying his performances. And then somebody that I think he's gorgeous, but I was hoping he was more than a pretty face, is Jay Ali, who plays Ray Nadine.
Yes.
His storyline is fantastic. Also, one, because he's like this FBI agent who's in debt, and there's this whole thing. We don't give big profile cases to people who are in debt because it's like a psychological high risk thing, which I thought was fascinating. And then also having this high profile case being run by a person of color, but he's making mistakes. And then him and the woman that are running it, they're not being blamed. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, they're going to be blamed based on their like merit, but it's just a subtle, like under the main storyline thing that I find fascinating, but again, could not be pulled off without his performance.
Yeah, he was a character when he was introduced that felt a little throwaway to me. I was like, if this had been handled differently, it could have been a very throwaway character. But I think because of his performance and the way, and also the way it's written, it gives more meat to it. And you actually, I'm three episodes in, and I care about that character on a level that, you know, he's very much a sideline supporting character, not the main character of the story, but I'm invested in his story already. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's not two-dimensional. Like, no spoilers, but it's very clear in the trailer that Fisk gets out of jail, so we're not spoiling that. But Ray has something to do with that, and what happens, it affects him really, really deeply, and it's just, his performance was really good. Like the hugging of his wife in the hallway. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. Like you just see him like just try. He looks like someone who's about to fall apart. Like her hug is the only thing that is keeping him together. And I'm like, that's for once. Wow. Okay. Good acting on a Marvel, you know, show. So I don't know. I'm in. I think like, again, tune in next week.
Once we've seen the full season.
And we're like, oh my God, after this episode, it went downhill. But I'm into it. Again, I think, I'm going to take my time. Like, Adam, I'm not going to binge it all night.
Well, and also, I should make very clear, I am not your typical superhero movie or TV show consumer. I very much like the talkie-talkie. I want to see people talking. In Black Panther, I was thinking, oh, do Killmonger and Black Panther have to actually fight, or can they just have a debate about colonialism and the right way to address it in the modern era? Like, that's what I want to see.
Before he dies.
Yeah, like, I want to see, like, the My Dinner with Killmonger movie, you know, where they just debate these philosophical issues for an hour and a half.
Well, there is a comic coming, so.
There you go.
Let's see if we get some of that, more of that.
I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of killing, because his name is Killmonger. So. Anyway, that's my appreciation of this show. While I do enjoy the fight scenes and the action, is very much because there is a lot of, to Danny's point, it's slow. It's a slow start. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of character drama, and I'm there for it.
But honestly, when I say that, what I mean is Haunting of Hill House, Daredevil, Sabrina, every week, how I'm supposed to do all. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like if someone said,
yeah,
like,
clone yourself, buddy.
If someone was like, it's only, I like, just if I knew it was a couple less episodes, I would be like, oh, okay, so like I could have some time to myself. Like, I don't, man, like, it's just a lot. It's
let me
just
tell you
so,
something.
It's just so much.
You have to let go. Just let go. You don't have to see everything.
But I do, this all is, the way but this through. Is my, but this is my problem. Is like, you know.
You want to see
there you are at your desk. If you miss a thing, you'll probably be all right. As a freelancer, this is true. My position on being a freelancer is that I do feel like the very second that I miss even one thing, they're going to go. Because this is a freelancer lifestyle. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm
like,
a freelancer
like,
too. My, I don't
but
have
my,
that.
But my mentality is always like, they'll go like, oh, if I say no to this thing, then someone else says yes. They'll be like, oh, this person is also like competent, doesn't make our life difficult, like works on the deadline.
So this is about tapped into the zeitgeist.
So I feel like I can never, I feel like I have to watch every single thing and I just need there to be less. That's it. I just need there to be less. Just
Danny
a little
needs
is
a vacation.
Too much. Yes. I need a vacation. I need some replacement organs. I need, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. I need to go to some doctors,
you need
some
to go
dentists.
Sleep and then, in the basement of a church for
and have
several
a nun,
weeks.
Have a nun yell at you.
Yeah.
This is hateful now. Like, I'm cool.
One of the interesting things about this season, at least in the first opening, is the Matt Murdock's Catholicism has always been a factor here.
Big in the
comics,
too.
It is a big factor here in his relationship to God. And as someone who has been living a very secular life for a long time, I mean, I was raised Catholic, but I, you know, spoilers, left the church a while ago and not really a religious person.
This is a safe space.
Spoilers for my life.
It's a safe space. It's
so,
okay.
No, but I'm saying, like, it's not really a part of my day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's weird for me to watch a little bit someone wrestling with it on that level in a TV show because, I don't have a lot of really religious friends, or at least those who are outwardly religious who talk about it a lot. So, you know, it was a little jarring for me to see all of that because it's not something that I see as this giant existential dilemma, but I thought it was well played.
It is well played. I also find it very interesting. I think that what was in the comics, but I think what they're trying to explore here is that much of Matt's life and his blindness and his being an orphan was explained away through religion, his Catholicism. And now that he's seeing the world fall apart and this religion not being able to solve all the problems. I mean, for him, even the fact that he called himself a daredevil,
right.
He's wrestling with identity because his moral code somehow has been shaken. But it's funny. The one thing that I did take away from season two, which is, and I've mentioned this before, which I think is being played out fully here, is Punisher said to him, "You're one bad day away from being me." And it's like, that's the theme, I feel, right, of this season. Like, this is one very long...
And, like, skirting the line?
Yeah, this is one Matt Murdock, no good, very bad day. Like, the entire season. And hopefully he comes out of it unscathed. Well, he's not going to be unscathed because Karen. But we'll, you guys will get to that.
Wow. She's the Trish.
I didn't like her.
She's the Daredevil Trish.
She's kind of the Trish, but I honestly think Trish is better. But it's just me.
That's a hurtful thing that you just said.
What? I know.
Because Trish is literally like the worst thing to come out of Marvel Netflix straight up. She's the worst character.
Well, no, I don't want to spoil it.
And I did like
I
Karen in season two because of her role as Frank Castle's conscience.
Yes.
That to me was an important thing
they didn't,
for her to do.
I think the problem, again, this is not the actress. This is how she was written. They made her the consciousness of too many people. Like season one, it was sort of, I might be the love interest or not of Matt, and then I'm the consciousness of, and for a minute there I thought she was going to get with Frank, like a love interest or not, a Frank or his consciousness. This season they give her her own arc and there's not enough there, and I feel like what she ends up doing, you guys will get there. I'm just like, come on. But anyway, that you guys will get there next week. We'll talk about it when we can spoil it.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about this, and I will be honest about something. I'm a little sad that Iron Fist, just a little bit, that Iron Fist got canceled.
Well, no, wait a minute. because I'm a little sad too, but like, it's not that I'm sad that, like, here's the thing, I'll be a lot less sad if the next words out of their mouths are, and now.
Daughters of the Dragon.
Daughters of the Dragon. Yep. Yes.
Like,
exactly.
If they just said that,
exactly,
then I'd be like, cool.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, because the thing is, you get to the end of the second season, honestly, like, even the Finn Jones, even the Danny Rand stuff, I was like, I could watch that, but like, the thing I want to see is
Colleen Wing,
and I definitely want to see Misty and Colleen
together.
Yeah,
and they have like, chemistry, yeah. So I would rather, I would see that.
But they have said that, like, there's stuff that's going to, like, that was in there that's going to pop up in other places. So I guess we'll see.
I would be stunned if we've seen the last of those two characters specifically.
It would be insane.
Marvel has listens to what's going on, what's
in
the wind.
Yeah, they got their ear to the street, so they know.
Well, I mean, I think the part that makes me sad, and this is also lends itself a little bit to the Wendig thing, and which we'll touch on briefly, and that is there's a bunch, like you said, Marvel listens to people. We a lot of us did not like season one. I and everybody had different reasons. A lot of different people had different reasons for not liking season one. But a lot of those things were addressed in season two, and then they canceled it. So it's sort of like, you want to say, okay, great, good job. Numbers are better. It worked.
Right.
Yay. And then they take it off the air. So it's sort of like, you listened, but you didn't, or was it doomed from the start and you had
signed all these contracts already?
That's
what I was going to ask you. Like, did they ever explain why? Like,
no.
It couldn't have been the numbers, because I'm pretty sure.
Well, the numbers are better than season one, but it still, I think, was still lower.
But we don't know. But this is the thing, is like, how can you know? Because Netflix has not released any numbers.
They don't have to share numbers.
So you don't
ever.
You don't know anything.
It's not coming back.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's not coming back.
But I wonder whether or not they decided to cancel it sooner than, like, maybe they decided to cancel it after season one, but they'd already signed contracts with everybody. I don't know. I just felt bad because it felt like they did do a better job. It was a perfect no, but they did a much better job with it. And then it got taken off, you know. And then the reason why I was saying it's kind of like Wendig is that, like, it's sort of like, even though Marvel wasn't happy with how he was acting on social media, the stuff that the people that he was up against were so incredibly horrible that taking him out is saying, taking him out of the equation is sending the wrong message, I think. So that's the only equation I was going to put with those two things.
I don't know. I think they should take Iron Fist and do the Heroes for Hire.
Yeah, Danny could show up occasionally in that, like, and have Cheo direct him, because he wasn't aggravating. Danny was not aggravating in Luke Cage.
No.
Well, and that's what I think, to Danny's point, you can maybe these, and this is kind of the way TV's, I'm stumbling over this a lot, but maybe this is the way, you know, I think some of this TV stuff is going anyways. You can do a Heroes for Hire miniseries and then be it.
Yes.
That, like, just do 6-8 episodes, yep, of that. It's a mini movie. It's, or, you know, it's a kind
it's
of a like
mini-series,
a movie. Yeah,
a
miniseries,
yeah.
And then it's done. You don't have to make a season two. Mm-hmm. It's just a one off thing that happens. And I think that would be cool. And I think we're going to see some of that anyway in other franchises that people are talking about coming to streaming. So, you know, I think that would be a great way to handle it.
I think they could do that with Daughters of the Dragon,
exactly,
too. But I think,
exactly,
it would be popular enough that they would bring it back,
yeah,
for more. But
yeah, but you give it a shot and see.
I don't think it has to be anything
give it
long.
Six episodes is fine.
And it could be, you know, just to test the waters or whatever. Because, Iron Fist walks so that the daughters can run, man. So let them run. Give them what they need.
I hope that line ends up in this miniseries. That would be amazing.
That was good.
I just think, the two actresses, Simone Mystic. Thank you, Simone Mystic and
Jessica Henwick.
Jessica Henwick. Ooh, I'm tripping over.
It's okay.
Terrible. They have really good chemistry.
They do.
They really own their roles, but we could see more of them. They could use a little bit more depth, a little bit more weight, and I think giving them that, I mean, people are calling for it. Just like, you know, 5 years ago, people were screaming about Black Widow, and they should have did it then, but you know.
Oh boy.
They eventually came through.
Oh.
And it's like,
That was my horror movie in two sentences.
Yeah, that was like.
That was it. I was like, the good news is they're going to make a movie based on my life. They just announced the casting. You guessed it. Scarlett Johansson.
You were hilarious.
Yeah, and I just think that
she just play everybody.
You just play everybody. I just think that it's something that they can expand on. It's something that people want. Give the people what they want. Marvel people are asking. Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, because the one scene, there were several scenes in season 2 that were good between the two of them, but when they fought the sisters, the tattoo mm-hmm. sisters. That right there, I was like, and Misty has more control of her powers. Mm. Also, I need her to get an upgrade on that arm. I need Misty to meet Tony Stark and go, what's wrong with your arm? Give it to me. Let me fix. Mm-hmm. So that she gets the whole gold thing. I want to see a powered up arm.
Rocket Raccoon wouldn't even want that arm.
No. Wow. Rocket would ask her to take it off as a joke.
Yeah. He'd just take it off.
He's like, give it to me. I don't really need it. Just give it to me.
You see this trash? That's where it belongs. Put that in there.
Wow.
Yeah. So. And that was the other thing. Like, what do you guys think about, do you think there should be some kind of layover, crossover, or whatever with the movies or whatever?
Oh, I don't think that can never happen.
They tried it with S.H.I.E.L.D.
They're never gonna do it.
Yeah. And S.H.I.E.L.D. has been the one show on ABC that's been the crossover into the MCU. It's been very difficult to do that with,
they'll mention it in passing, but I don't
think
they'll
do it. Put Vincent D'Onofrio in a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, I mean that would be cool. They had Kingpin in the Spider-Man game that just came out.
Yep. They did.
So, but yeah, I don't know if that'll
ever
happen.
That is the one thing I would really love to see. Because Spider-Man and Kingpin have such a long relationship in the comics.
Some things I don't think can be figured out. I don't know if that's ever
going to be. Well, I think now that they have Spider-Man, that they could do it. They couldn't do it before. It took them
They only kind of have him. They kind of have him.
But like those small subtleties, like you mentioned, like, start giving Misty an arm, like stuff like that.
Yeah,
well,
that's
the thing.
If it was all the way clear, then that's not a joke. Already, you would just send her to Wakanda, and that's it's a wrap.
There's already a cloak and dagger, Misty Knight connection.
Because
the cop last season, first season rather of Cloak and Dagger says, "Yeah, I came from New York. You used to work with Misty Knight." She talked about that, so it was like, "Oh wait, Misty's coming to New Orleans," like that would be interesting, especially the way the season ended and what happened with that cop. So it would be interesting if Misty does, you know. And
they should
really
at least do
things.
TV crossover. Like, come on.
Yeah. See,
shows?
I think the problem the Winter Soldier Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing problem was they tried to make it too big.
Yeah.
Oh, the whole story is going to win together. It's like no. Just take one character from the show, put him in a movie, or take one character mm-hmm. from the movie, have him show up in a show. You don't need to totally wind everything into this giant Gordian knot.
Like what they tried to do with Thor and Sif when she showed up, and I was like,
and the same thing happened with Coulson, because now Coulson is alive and the Avengers still don't know.
Yeah.
Mm.
And now half the Avengers are gone. They're going to come back, and if he shows up, it's like, huh? But he's in Captain Marvel.
Right.
So that means that, like, if he does show up in Infinity War 2. Captain Marvel's going to know who he is.
No, but he's in Captain Marvel in the 90s. It's a prequel.
Right.
So it takes place in the past. So she wouldn't know he's alive.
That's right. She wouldn't know he's alive, but it'll be really interesting.
Would she even know he's dead? Like, he's
dead? Exactly. She wouldn't know that he died and came back twice. Yeah. And now that he's part Kree, it would be a problem.
Right.
So
right.
it's like, it's that's what wow. I'm saying. I think they painted Coulson into a corner.
Just put Kingpin in a Spider-Man movie.
How keep up with this?
Yeah, that's like you're just like,
how?
Yeah.
How? Okay, can we just
move on to the final thing?
Here's the thing. I just want to because the thing is, we were going to talk about the Shuri comic. I got to be honest, I would rather talk about that Shuri comic than talk about the Chuck Wendig thing. Can we just all agree they shouldn't have fired him? Do we all agree that man should not have been fired? Do we all agree with that?
But the one interesting thing I want to say is I think a lot of these, any big media corporation wants to avoid controversy, right? Yeah. But literally everything is controversial now.
Yeah.
I like ice cream.
Controversial.
I put that on social media and people are going to attack me for it, you know? So it's just an adjustment to a new world, I think. And giant corporations,
they're not ready to move on.
They are notoriously slow at adapting to new things. So
and they
throw the
baby out with the bathwater many times when they're trying to make the decision. Like, we don't have the time or the resources to research this, so just fire everybody and keep moving.
It's what they see is controversy. They see this giant blinking sign. It's like, but you have to see that those blinking signs are literally everywhere. Everybody's Twitter feed is that.
Mm-hmm.
So Except like this, for maybe like, We Rate Dogs. You know, even We Rate Dogs had a controversy.
Wow. Did they really?
Yeah.
People got
mad because they changed this dog's name when they posted his picture, and people were like, that's not the dog's real name. And
oh my God.
It was like a whole big thing.
It was a riot.
Yeah. So I'm saying, like, I understand that desire not to have, you know, this person saying like really incendiary things, but
there's gotta be a nuance, and like, yeah. You know what I mean? Here we go. Like here we got Chuck Wendig. He did Star Wars Aftermath, the book. It was a big deal. They had a gay protagonist. Like, that's not a thing that you really see a lot in Star Wars. Some people liked it. Some people didn't. People who didn't are bigots. The end. And he's, you know, like, has been a person that sort of like coming out of that was, you know, going to take a defensive stance because,
But it wasn't just about his work. He's a very vocal, very passionate, very about all media and the political discussion therein. It wasn't just about his work. It was about The Last Jedi. Yeah. It was about other stuff as well.
Yeah, but like after a certain point, it's like the people that he was like, yes, he did that. But like he also had like the conversation is very weird, right? Because like, first of all, we don't really know. Like, he got fired, but, like, his editor took the fall guy. Like, yeah, I was the one. But, like, you know, like, Chuck Wendig is saying, like, you know, if you look at the emails, like, there's more to it than that. Because they were like, oh, they didn't like my language. But it was really my politics that they didn't like. And, like, that's so, like, is that a pro-mutter situation? Like, you don't know. Is it that, like, are they afraid of something? Like, the bottom line for me is, like, you can say what you want about, like, a person's politics. But, like, Chuck Wendig is coming after who? Proud Boys. White supremacists. Literal Nazis. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I was, like, writing up about it, it was, like, even, like, the closest analog, like, people, maybe compare a little bit with the James Gunn thing. But, like, look what, like, when those folks, like, came for James Gunn, like, there were skeletons in his closet. What is Chuck Wendig got for? Like, what? Because he doesn't like Nazis? Whoa!
No,
you know
well,
what? Like, to me, like, that's the thing that drives me wild. That's why, like, no matter how I look at it, no matter, like, what angle, like, you know what I mean? Like, even if I just wanted to be such a little centrist about it, there's just, to me, there's no logic. The man should not have been fired.
But I don't know if it's, from our perspective, and I agree with you, that it doesn't look logical, but I also, when I'm going through all, because they also, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, they didn't just take him off the Star Wars book. The book is not coming out.
Yeah, the book's
now.
Not coming out, period.
Oh, wow.
So
And there was another whole book after that that he was going to do, and that's also out.
And they were just announced at New York Comic Con.
So the books are canceled.
Yeah. Canceled. Yeah, not coming not out coming at out. All. So here's the thing. This is from me. When I saw that, I said, okay, now I think it's personal between him and this editor. Because social media is one thing. But to stop a book that had a following that you just advertised that all these people are hyped for, I personally think that in addition to some of the other stuff that, you know, he was saying, like maybe Marvel might have had a problem with some of his politics and how he voiced them on social media. I personally think, this is just me, this is not based on fact or research, this is just my opinion, that he Chuck Wendig had a personal issue or there was an issue that the editor had with him, because he's coming after him in a very specific way. And he's like, yeah, I did it. What? And it's because people have been fired before. People have been, books have been stopped before, but entire things and changing. There's like, Wendig hinted, he didn't specify, but he said he thinks that some of the books that he even worked on are being renumbered. Like, this is,
wow.
We're taking you out of the canon. You know what I mean? We're removing you from this. What did you do? This could not just be of Twitter. The punishment doesn't fit the crime. It doesn't make sense.
Seems excessive.
Very
right?
Excessive and very personal.
Yeah.
So I think if it's not the editor, something else happened. Whatever it is, I don't think we're ever going
to
know.
Like, yeah, like somebody was just looking for an excuse to be like, oh, this is it. Let him go.
Yeah. You know. Or final straw. It felt like that's it. Just let him
anyway,
go.
He should go. He should go write a Suicide Squad comic. Got
there
it.
Go.
Nailed it. Just go work for DC. Uh-huh. I guess that's what people do now. Like somebody fired you, just jump up over to the other team. You know what I mean? Like you worked at GameStop, got fired, go work at Suncoast Motion Picture Company. That's what I did. I'm just kidding. Suncoast is gone now. But like,
well, no.
If you get fired
from Reebok, go work at Nike. Right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Got it.
Perfect.
Nailed it. Anyway. Do you want to talk about Sherry real quick? Just because it was nice. I liked it.
I mean, first of all, I'm a Nnedi Okorafor fan. You guys heard me last week talk about her science fiction series, Binti. She's won several awards for that. She's an award-winning writer in her own right who has that, no pun intended, who is a fan of comics and has written several. That people think that Shuri is her first comic, but it's not. She had a Black Panther comic that came out last year. She's working on an Antar series, which has been out for a while, and she's done comics in the past as well. I am a fan of this. I liked what I read. I liked what I saw. I have one criticism, and I don't want to blame this on Nnedi. I think I want to blame this on Marvel, in that I wish this comic, and this is not spoiling it, I wish the comic literally took Shuri, was a continuation of Shuri from the movie. What the comic does is try to be a continuation of the movie as well as Ta-Nehisi Coates' run of her storyline in the book. So it is post Shuri coming back to life, basically with the powers of her ancestors that she got when she was basically in stasis, when she was almost killed in the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, as well as and everybody knows if you read that run that she came back a little older, like she'd aged in that parallel world. In this, she's back down to the age of a teenager, which is the same Shuri that we met in the movie.
Right.
And it's a little disconcerting at first because you're like, okay, wait, why? And it's disconcerting because it's literally, you're figuring out who she is and then T'Challa is gone. And it's been, they talked about that in the previews. That's not a spoiler. I think the stuff I like about it is I think it's executed very well. I think it's written very well. There's hints back to some of the Black Panther run that she wrote. I want to see more of this story. It's a good setup, as most first comics, most number ones are. Did a lot in 22 pages. I think the funniest thing, the most interesting thing for me is there's a lot of people reading this comic that haven't read a lot of comics before because they are here because of
Black Panther movie, right?
Yeah, Black Panther movie was their first intro into the comic book world. So they're very confused as to why the cover, all the cover art and the variant art doesn't look anything like the interiors.
Right.
Those of us who've read comics for years, we know the comic book art, the cover art is meant to sell the comic so that you will buy it and then open it up. I like the art on both, but I think it is interesting to see people who are not comic book fans, like not understand that type of, the lack of continuity there. The only other thing that I find is interesting is that Manifold's her boyfriend, which is like, okay. Also confusing because in Ta-Nehisi Coates' run, I got the feeling that he was almost the age of T'Challa.
Right. Which but, is like mad weird.
Right. But, and now, so that's the only thing that I'm like, just sort of settling into this world. I wish they didn't worry about connecting stuff. She explains why her hair isn't white anymore. She does reference, you know, all of that. I like the Council of Women. Like her mother and everybody are sitting down having a conversation, which I did not think was handled well in Coates' version. When his mother was left in charge last time, we saw, I mean, she was a very important part to the story, but we didn't see her council. Mm-hmm. Nnedi is really showing us, like, no, these are the elder women of Wakanda, and we're going to handle business the way we handle it.
So you think they just handed her... They were like, this is what we want in it, and she had to integrate it into the writing? Or?
I get the feeling that is what happened with that. Yes. Short answer, yes. Because I've read so much of her work, and she's very good at integrating these different ideas and thoughts and places, and I felt that was very... Here, make sure you say
they didn't
this.
Let her establish her own world.
Yeah, like I kind of feel like some of that we could have gotten in the next issue.
Right.
I didn't feel... You know, I felt like... But once we got past the little bit of exposition, then I felt the story was fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, people who watch TV at this point, this is true. Like, people accept a lot.
That's
where it's
true.
Like, you got to get through the show doesn't get good until season 3, and people will be like, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, yes, I agree with you for sure that, like, the fact that, like, they're definitely trying to pull in and people watch the movie, but they're still trying to keep continuity of the comics. Like, that's a tough circle to square, square to circle. Which one is it? Rhombus to dodecahedron?
Circle gets the square.
There you go.
Thank you, Shadow Stevens.
No, because it is. It's like you got World of Wakanda. You've got the Black Panther nation beneath our feet. You've got the movie. You got, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot that you got to pull from.
But if
and,
you, yeah, but like if people can like give a show like however many number yeah. episodes to get it going, like
I wish they gave her more issues to establish that.
Like yeah, but I mean like honestly, like if you read the first issue and were like, this is a lot. Like here's the thing about comic books. This is a lesson if you don't read a lot of comics. Good news, if you read the first page, sometimes they'll have like a little paragraph.
Yep.
And the paragraph will let you know some things that you need to know to understand mm-hmm. this issue. And also, like sometimes when you read, they'll put a little asterisk next to something, they'll say, like, the editor will be like, what happened in this? So if you want to go back, you can. And I know for a fact that they do mention, they're like, you should, like, yes. as happened in this and this.
They did
so
do
like,
that, yeah.
So you, like, you read this issue and you were like, I like this. I want to understand this better. Like, this is your gateway. This is your opportunity. Like, you look at that and go, okay. So I'm like, go on Comixology, go to a comic book, a brick and mortar, whatever. Like, these things are available to you. Oftentimes, they're even, like, pretty affordable, especially, like, if you can do, like, a digital, if you're comfortable with it. They'll usually, like, have deals and stuff. Like, you can get a thing on the cheap. And then, like, now you caught up.
Now you caught up, yeah.
So, like, it's
there. And again, I'm not against Manifold, by the way. I'm very, very happy that they are keeping him in this world because I felt that – I've always felt that Manifold – I have a affinity for poorly used mutants. And I think that that Manifold is one of those like powerful mutants that was not used that much. And I was really happy to see him get pulled into this universe. Because if Manifold and Bishop and Nightcrawler all had a competition, Manifold would win.
Okay.
Manifold does not need to see where he's going. But he also does not need to see where he's going to get there. You need to explain to him, but he doesn't need to have to see it first like Kurt does. Kurt will have you half hanging out the wall if you can't see where you're going. And Bishop.
Yeah, and Magic's got to go through a hell dimension. Like,
right. And Bishop has problems. To go to a different time period. Like, he can't just go to Brooklyn. Like, he's got to go. Like,
the Brooklyn 1979.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
Now, the question is. Could he do Brooklyn 1 second ago?
See?
That would
be interesting.
That's practical teleportation right there.
Isn't that what Kitty could do in the last movie?
Yeah, but see, Kitty wasn't supposed to do that. We can't talk about those things.
Okay.
That was, she was robbed.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be
Rachel. See, I just solved Bishop's teleportation problem.
Yes.
It was supposed to be Rachel or Rogue or, yeah, like, could have been a lot of people.
No, it really was. Rachel Summers, I will
But they literally, there's a cut of the movie called The Rogue Cut where it's Rogue that did it. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the Rogue Cut.
Is that in the same vault with the Snyder Cut of the Justice League?
No, this one actually exists. No, this is actually real. Like, they actually released this.
What?
Yeah, it's called the Rogue Cut.
Adam's like, no, this is reality.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta seek that one out.
So, but,
yeah.
but it's not good,
but you could, yeah, I mean, like, if you gotta be a completionist, then yeah, you can know.
The one last thing I wanted to say about Shuri, though, is for those of you who are reading and are interested in reading the second one, I say this all the time, pre-order issues 2 and 3 so this book keeps going. Because one of the things that's very hard for a lot of new comic book readers to get is that you've got to pre-order them so that the print will come out. I hope we can set up and get a volume in 6 months and hear that issue 1 and 2 have to be reprinted. Like,
yeah.
Ms. Marvel was.
That'd be great.
We're not going to get it unless... And I remember a lot of people complaining about the fact that World of Wakanda did not... Roxane Gay's version didn't last that long. But it's because a lot of people didn't realize that that's what you have to do. You've got to pre-order. It's not just going to... Like, I went to the bookstore, but I couldn't find it. I went to the comic book shop, but I couldn't find it. You've got to pre-order. So
if they're not pre-ordered, do they just go digital, or do they just not release?
It'd be great if it's
digital. You can pre-order the digital, too.
You can pre-order the digital, especially... Yes, now, thank God. But Diamond still does not count the digital numbers like they count the print. So try and pre-order and try and go back and pick that book up. Now, again, the digital numbers might be great, but it's like Netflix. We'll never know because they never share them.
All right. Well, I think that's it. I think 150 is in the books.
Haha.
Woohoo!
150 episodes.
150 minutes.
Yes, 150 exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No joke. All right. Well... Before we go, what's my shtick? Oh, hey, if you're listening to this podcast, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't before. If you've never given a review, feel free to give a review. Jordan Zacharin at the Phantom Files begs for 5 stars, but I'm too good for that. I say you should give me whatever. You should give us whatever number of stars you want.
Yes, and then, yourself. And then, we're begging for 5 stars.
No, I mean,
give us all the stars.
All right. I mean, that's not. I mean, like,
Adam
I want the truth. I want honesty from people.
SZA said all the stars.
Wow.
So
all right. All the stars in the sky, and then they'll make Godzilla. And when you're done with Godzilla, listen to the other podcasts. So like the Phantom Files is a podcast for beggars. Apparently, no, it's a great podcast. Sean Fumo characters. Are any of the other ones running right now? I mean, you can go, if you want to get caught up on Winona Earp is wrapped. Is a wrap on that. But like, if you're getting caught up on the series, you can go back and listen to it. There's some Amazon podcasts. I do one of them. Angelique Rocher does another one. There's a debate club.
Adam does one every day.
Adam
People
does
don't
one
realize
every
this.
Day.
Adam's on,
that's like sure. if you want to get the
Adam's on Amazon every single day. So if you have Alexa, you can actually ask for sci-fi daily news hits, and Adam will give them to you. He will read them to you personally in his dulcet tones.
Yeah.
Give me Adam, Alexa.
Yeah, yeah. And he'll hit you up.
And
there
then play Despacito.
Whoa. Got it. Thanks, everybody, for being on this episode and for being around for 150, 150. Where can people find you on the internet? Not at home, that would be weird, but on the internet,
don't
where
come
can
to
people
my
find
house.
You?
I'm not answering the door. You can find me, Karma, the blurred girl, TheBlerGurl, all over the interwebs, mostly on Twitter and Instagram, though.
And you can find me on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter, Valerie Complex, ValeriComplex. And on Instagram, ValeriComplex. This is too much to spell out. Sorry, I got lazy. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for
thanks
joining
for
us.
Yeah.
Really
appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
Thanks,
very much.
Thanks for talking to Danny. We don't like doing it.
I love Danny.
That's the right answer. My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.